said.
And frankly, right now, I don't really care. But we have a job to do here. Perhaps I can make that job unnecessary.
Card said, a sudden edge in his voice.
You get me inside, and I may be able to stop this battle completely.
Really?
Rogue Two said, his voice suddenly suspicious.
May I ask how exactly you plan to do that?
There was a slight pause, and Wedge could picture Card smiling that mysterious smile he was so fond of.
Let's just say I'm holding the ultimate bargaining chip.
And that would be...
All wings, this is Paris.
The fighter commander's voice came on.
Run to formation. We're heading in.
Wedge took a deep breath. They were under official orders now, with no room for maneuvering or stalling or anything else. But General Bel Iblis's life was on the line here. Card, this is Antilles, he said. Where are you?
Coming up behind and above the Peregrine. Are you starting an attack?
Something like that, Wedge said, checking his rear scanner. The wild card was there, all right, hanging a respectful distance back from the New Republic sentry line.
Stay put. We'll be right there. Rogues, let's go.
He turned the X-Wing hard over and headed toward their rear. There was a click in his headset as someone keyed to his personal frequency.
Wedge, what are we doing?
Rogue Nine demanded.
We're under orders. Look, if this is about this so-called favor I owe him...
I'm not worried about favors right now, Corrin, Wedge assured him. But you heard what Card said. He's got an Imperial code for getting through the perimeter.
Yes, I remember. But his having an access code won't do us any good.
Ordinarily, no, Wedge agreed, smiling tightly. But also remember what Rogue 12 said about that turbolaser flutter. If we guide Card in under that particular bank, and if we then stay clustered real close behind him...
Rogue 9 hissed thoughtfully.
That might just do it.
It's worth a try anyway, Wedge said.
Because if they could get in behind the perimeter, they'd have a far better shot at knocking out the tractor beam emplacements that held the Aaron Venture trapped. And the faster they knocked out those emplacements, the sooner Bel Iblis would be able to turn his ship around and make a run for safety.
Wedge,
Rogue Nine said, his voice sounding odd.
You don't suppose Card really can stop the battle, do you?
Wedge started to shake his head. Paused. This was Corrin Horn, Jedi, asking the question.
Not really, he said cautiously. The Imperials want Bel Iblis, that much is for sure. The only reason I can think of why he'd let them go is if they got something they wanted even more.
That's what I was thinking, too,
Rogue Nine said, his voice still odd.
So why am I also thinking Card really does have a shot at this?
Wedge felt a shiver tingle the back of his neck.
I don't know, he said grimly. All I know is that he's our best shot of getting Bel Iblis and Booster out of there alive. Right now, that's all I care about.
They had reached the wild card now, and Wedge pulled his fighter around in a sharp turn into forward escort position.
Okay, Card. Here we go, he said, double-checking that the rest of the squadron was in position. Stay close and follow me.
Chapter 39.
The Sentinel droid continued its attack, systematically sending its fiery bolts of death in Mara's direction. Her lightsaber leaped to meet each one, hands twisting and turning and jabbing the weapon at the guidance of the Force. She knew her hands were moving, just as she knew that her teeth were clenched tightly together and that there were drops of sweat rolling down her face. But she couldn't feel them, couldn't feel any of it. So focused was her mind, so locked into the terrible struggle for survival, that there was nothing else in the universe that seemed able to penetrate into her consciousness. Not the rest of the chamber, not the shape of the Sentinel dimly visible behind the dazzling glare of the blaster bolts, not even her own body. Nothing but the blasters and her lightsaber. And Luke. It was a strange sensation, The small part of her mind that was still free to wonder about such things realized. Standing back to back, stretched out so deeply together to the Force, it was as if their minds had literally melded together to become a single entity. She could feel his mental and physical strain as he maintained his own defense. Could sense his reliance on the Force, and his desperate search for a plan to get them out of this. And his deep concern for the woman standing there with him. In one way, it was almost like a logical extension of the brief emotional contacts they'd had throughout this trip. But in another way, it was something completely new. Like nothing she'd ever before experienced. Because within the depth of that mental rapport, she suddenly and totally knew Luke Skywalker. Knew everything about him. His hopes and fears. His successes and failures. His strengths and weaknesses. His highest joys and his deepest and most private sorrows. She saw into his innermost spirit, to the depths of his heart, to the very core of his being. And she knew that even as he lay open before her eyes, so also her heart and spirit were open before his. Yet it wasn't frightening or humiliating as she might have expected, as she would have expected. It was instead something completely exhilarating. Never before had she experienced such a depth and closeness to another person. A person who understood her as intimately as she understood him. Never had she known such a relationship could even exist. And never before had she realized how badly she wanted such a relationship. And that was, in its way, the most surprising part of all. To suddenly realize, after so many years, how much her determination to lock herself away from others had ended up hurting her. Had stunted her own growth and life, just as her stubborn refusal to accept the responsibility of her Jedi abilities had limited their growth. It was an amazing insight, particularly coming as it did in the midst of the fire and heat of a battle. She could only regret that the understanding hadn't come to her sooner, instead of now. Now that she was about to die. Because her death was indeed close at hand, one way or another. Already she could feel her muscles tiring before the Sentinel's onslaught, and knew that she couldn't maintain her defense more than a few minutes more at the most. She had to act now, while she still had the strength to do so. Or Luke would die too. Because while the plan she'd come up with might eliminate the threat from the Sentinel in front of her, there was no way she could take out both of its blasters fast enough to keep a killing shot from reaching her. Fleetingly, she thought of Corran Horn and his ability to absorb and dissipate energy. But that had never been one of her talents, and there was certainly no time for her to learn the technique now. No. She would throw her lightsaber at her chosen target, and the Sentinel would shoot her. She would die. All she could hope for was to cling to life long enough to finish what had to be done. No, Mara! No! Was that her thought, she wondered? Or was it Luke's? I have to, Luke! That one was hers. Through her own fears and regrets, she could feel his sudden surge of desperate emotion as he tried to come up with a way she would not have to die. But there wasn't one. Mara had already considered every possibility, and there simply wasn't any way Luke could hold off four blasters by himself when two of them were firing at his back this way. But if she could just live long enough to carry this through, using her body to shield him until the Sentinel facing her could be eliminated... While I still have the strength... She reminded herself. And the time was now. She took a deep breath. No! The emotion broke through her black determination. Wait! Look! She had no attention to spare to look anywhere but at the Sentinel and its blasters. But she didn't have to. Luke had already seen the critical new factor. And now the image flowed through the Force into her mind. Off to her right... His little electric arc welder extended ahead of him like a weapon.
R2 was rolling determinedly along the upper floor ring toward her attacker. Her first thought was to wonder what in blazes had taken the little droid so long to get his metal rear over here to help. Only then realizing how little time had actually elapsed since the battle began. Her second, somewhat irreverent thought, was to note that R2 had chosen her sentinel to attack instead of Luke's, and to wonder if the Skywalker tendency toward overprotectiveness had rubbed off on him. Her third thought was that Luke was right. This might be the break she needed, the opening for her plan to succeed without her having to die in the process. Maybe. R2 was almost to the sentinel now, a bluish spark arcing across the welder contacts. The sentinel was perfectly aware of him, of course. The only question was what it would do about it. And then, an image flashed into Mara's mind. A picture of her and Luke lying on the floor amid the tangle of trip cords down there. She felt herself gasp. Was that a vision of the future? Of them lying dead together? Was her plan doomed to failure? You see? Luke's emotion broke through the sudden fear. You understand? And then the image cleared, and she indeed saw what he meant. Not a vision of death, but a hope of life. Luke's own last-second contribution to her plan. Got it! She sent back her understanding. Get ready. She felt her teeth clenching even harder, lightsaber still flashing against the Sentinel's attacks, and prepared herself. R2 was almost to the Sentinel, his arc welder still sparking. And with a casual and contemptuous ease, the Sentinel swung its left arm over, placed the side of the blaster in that hand against R2's dome, and shoved the little droid over to land flat on his back. And for that half second, only one of his blasters was firing. Now! Mara reacted instantly, letting her right leg collapse beneath her to send her toppling over onto her right side. Luke fell right along with her, his back pressed against hers the whole way down. They hit the floor. There was probably a jolt of pain in her shoulder from the impact, but Mara wasn't aware of it. And Luke flipped over onto his back to face upward toward the ceiling. And with that single move, suddenly, there were no longer two attacks coming from totally opposite directions. Now it was merely two attacks coming from a pair of widely spaced opponents, both of whom were effectively in front of him. And that was something he could handle. Go! His command came as the green-white of his lightsaber flashed past over her head, deflecting a shot away from her face. Mara didn't need the prompting. Already her lightsaber was spinning its way toward the Sentinel. A quick slash, and the blaster in its right hand had shattered to uselessness. Its other hand was already swinging back toward her. The lightsaber changed direction and slashed again, and the Sentinel's second blaster was similarly gone. There was a short rumbling roar from the big droid. Apparently it had enough sentience to be annoyed at having been outmaneuvered this way. But it was also smart enough to know the disadvantage was only temporary, that her lightsaber couldn't harm it directly, at least not fast enough to do any good. And its designers had also clearly prepared for such an eventuality. Two more compartments along its lower sides had popped open, and the Sentinel's hands were already digging into them for another set of replacement weapons. But with luck, it would never have a chance to use them. Mara had already brought her lightsaber around in front of the Sentinel, turning it to point blade first toward the big droid. Now, grunting with the effort, she drove it forward. Not uselessly into the Sentinel and its cortosis or shell, but straight past it, burying the blue-white blade in the water-stained wall behind it. The jet of water that burst out around the handle was instant and violent, some of the spray reaching all the way to where she and Luke lay on the floor 30 meters away. Mara felt a sudden twinge of uneasiness at the force of the flow, but it was too late to stop now. Holding the weapon in against the pressure, she spun it around in a 10-centimeter diameter circle, the hilt more than once nearly vanishing from her view behind the widening spray of water coming out through the crack she was cutting. The Sentinel turned its head to see what was happening, lifted its blasters toward the lightsaber, and with a last burst of effort, Mara finished the cut.
The stone plug came blasting out of the wall with the speed of a proton torpedo, slamming directly into the Sentinel's thick torso with armor-crushing force and knocking the big droid helplessly off the upper ring down onto the main floor. Mara caught a glimpse of crumpled metal, saw that the stream of water that had driven the plug was now shooting across the room over her head. And suddenly, a foam-crested wave slammed into and over her from the opposite direction. With her mind still in the tunnel vision of Jedi defense mode, the wave caught her completely off guard. She felt herself being lifted and thrown by the wild surf as her feet were somehow pushed clear of the tangling trip cords and scrambled madly for something to hang on to. Her left hand caught another bunch of the cords, and she hung on grimly, trying to orient herself. Another wave washed over her, tearing her grip away, and once again she found herself being spun around in the turbulence. She clawed her way to the surface, caught a breath that seemed to be half air and half foam, shook the water out of her eyes to see another wave surging toward her. And then, a pair of hands caught her under the arms, and with a tug that felt like it was going to tear her in half, she was suddenly arcing upward through the air. There was a jolt as her back slammed into something hard. One of the two hands holding her fell away as the other tightened its grip. "Here, hold on!" Luke shouted in her ear. She half-turned in his single-handed grip, saw the railing to the upper equipment balcony there beside her, and grabbed onto it. "Got it!" "Hang on. I'm going back for R2. Letting go of the railing, he dropped back into the water. With an effort, Mara pulled herself up the railing and over onto the balcony floor. Below her, she could see, the room had become a surging mass of frothing water. And it was filling up fast. Much faster than it should have, she realized uneasily. And suddenly she saw why. The small, neat hole she'd cut in the wall was no longer either small nor neat. 4 or 5 square meters of the water-stained section had given way around it, and the lake of small fish was pouring in through the opening. Already it was halfway up the wall to the ledge where she sat. A movement across the room caught her eye. Luke, hanging on to some protrusion in the wall, waving toward her.
"I'm here!" she shouted over the roar of the water. "What do you need?"
In answer, the top of R2's dome rose a few centimeters above the waves. Bracing herself, Mara stretched out with the force and lifted the droid toward her. It was harder than she'd expected it to be. Far harder than it ought to have been. The droid rose over the water with agonizing slowness, and twice during the procedure she nearly lost her grip entirely. Clearly the battle with the Sentinel droids had taken more out of her than she'd realized. But finally she made it, and the droid settled down with a pensive gurgle beside her. He'd been battered around by the water, and had lost the data pad they'd rigged to him for translation, but otherwise he seemed all right. She looked back down, searching for Luke. A hand slapped up to a grip on the bottom rail.
"You get R2 up?"
Luke gasped, pulling himself laboriously up the railing.
"He's right here,"
Mara confirmed, reaching over the railing to give him a hand.
"You okay?"
"Just fine,"
he panted, as he made it over the railing and collapsed onto the balcony beside her.
"Lesson number one," he added between breaths. "A Jedi needs air to function properly."
"I'll make a note,"
Mara said, peering down through the railing again.
"What about the second Sentinel?"
"I took care of him," Luke said. Already he was breathing easier. "Here's your lightsaber," he added, pulling both weapons from inside his tunic and handing hers over. "Good job with the wall, by the way."
"Oh, sure. Great job," Mara retorted. "There's nothing so brilliant as a plan that ends up almost drowning you. Speaking of which, shouldn't we be getting out of here before it gets any deeper?"
There was a brief pause.
"Well, actually..."
She looked at him, a sudden flicker of fear touching her heart.
"What's the matter?"
He reached over and took her hand.
I'm sorry, Mara, he said. The water's already above the level of the tunnel. It's already filling that underground room back there. Mara stared at him. She'd had no idea the water was coming in that fast.
All right,
she said, forcing her voice to stay calm, forcing her mind to stay calm.
All right, so the room's filling up. If we can make it across to the stairway, we can at least climb up into the fortress, right?
A muscle in his cheek twitched. You don't understand, he said. It's already above the level of the tunnel. That means traveling that whole 100 meters without air, plus probably having to get the whole way across the underground room, too.
What about a hibernation trance? Mara suggested. Like the one you used to cold-shirt it across to the starry ice from the pirate base.
Luke shook his head. With the underground room filling up, or maybe already mostly full, the water won't be flowing fast enough through the tunnel to push us through in time. And it was for sure they couldn't swim while in a trance. Mara pushed a lock of wet hair off her face, trying to think. Beside Luke, R2 gave a sudden nervous squawk. I see it, Luke told him.
See what?
Mara asked. The water level's starting to rise again, he said reluctantly. That means the underground room must be full. The only drainage we're getting is through the two holes we cut. The one into the stairway area, and the one back down into the caverns. Mara swallowed.
Small holes.
Far too small to handle the amount coming in, Luke agreed soberly. I'm afraid. He trailed off. Mara gazed down at the surging water, now high enough to hide the inflow through the hole she'd cut, but it was still coming in. The steady rippling in the surface was enough to show that.
Back when you first came here, she said, I told you you could go back to Coruscant if you wanted to, and let the Quam Ja and me tackle the fortress by ourselves. You said no, that you had to be here, and you said not to ask you why.
He took a deep breath. I had a vision of you on Tearfall, he said quietly. Back before I knew you disappeared. I saw you lying in a pool of water, surrounded by craggy rock. He hesitated. And you looked...
dead?
He sighed. Yes. For a long moment they sat there together. The rushing of water, the only sound.
Well, I guess that's that, then,
Mara said at last.
At least I have the minor satisfaction of knowing I did it to myself.
Don't give up yet, Luke said. But there was no particular hope in his voice that she could detect. There has to be a way out of this.
Too bad, too,
Mara said. She looked at him, tracing the contours of his face with her eyes.
You didn't know, but after that pirate base thing, Fawn told me you and I made a good team. She was right. We really did.
We really do, Luke corrected, looking almost nervously into her eyes. You know when we were fighting those sentinels down there? Something happened to me. To us. We were so close in the force that it was like we'd become a single person. It was something very special. She lifted an eyebrow, a flicker of amusement worming its way through even the deadly seriousness of the situation. There was such an oddly awkward earnestness to his expression.
Really?
She said.
How special?
He grimaced. You're not going to make this easy for me, are you? He growled.
Oh, come now,
she said, mock accusingly.
When have I ever made anything easy for you?
Not very often, he conceded. Visibly bracing himself, he reached over and took her hands again. Mara, will you marry me?
You mean if we get out of here alive?
Luke shook his head. I mean regardless. Under other circumstances, she knew, she would probably have considered herself honor-bound to make him sweat just a little. But with the water still rising below them, such games seemed rather pointless. Besides, there was no reason for old defensive patterns to come into play. Not now. Not with him.
Yes, she said. I will.
Chapter 40. A blast of turbolaser fire shot past, burning a scorch line in the Predominance's bridge canopy. It was like an omen, Leia thought darkly, as she stepped past the outer monitor ring and into the central control cluster. An omen of her own impending downfall. What she was about to do, she knew, would most likely be the end of her political career. It could possibly send her to a penal colony. It could even cost her her life. But Han's own life was hanging in the balance. Against that, nothing else mattered. She stopped behind the Ashori at the helm station and looked over his shoulder at his control board. The indicators and controls were labeled in Ashori, of course, but the board itself was a straight Kuat drive yard's design, and she knew the layout. Taking a deep breath, she stretched out to the Force and keyed the sublight drive lever. The helmsman himself was first to notice something was wrong. Rumbling something under his breath, he pulled the lever back to its original position. Leia pushed it forward again, this time also laying in a new ship's vector toward the comet blazing in the distance. The helmsman rumbled again, louder this time, and again grabbed the lever. Except that this time, it didn't move. Leia held it firm against his struggles, and as he paused, confused, she took the opportunity to push it still farther forward. The helmsman swiveled in his seat to look at Captain Avmaru, and out of the corner of his eye, he spotted Leia standing behind him.
"What do you do here?"
he shouted, swiveling farther around to glare up at her.
"Guards!"
Leia turned. Two guards were striding toward her, blasters in hand. Stretching out against the Force, she plucked the blasters away from them and slammed the weapon straight down to the deck with shattering force.
"Counselor!"
Avmaru shouted, jumping up from his seat.
"What are you doing?"
Leia didn't answer, but reached again for the speed control.
"No!"
the helmsman screamed, leaping out of his chair with his hands reaching for her throat. The clutching fingers never got there. Leia caught him in midair in a Force grip, redirecting the direction of his leap to send him soaring instead over the monitor ring to land in a confused heap at the back of the bridge.
"Guards!"
Avmaru shouted.
"All guards!"
Leia turned back to the helm, again increasing the ship's speed. Her senses flared with warning, and she snatched up her lightsaber just as two other guards on the far side of the room brought their blasters up. They fired, their stun bolts scattering uselessly from her glowing blade. Again, she snatched the weapons away, this time bringing them flying across the bridge toward her and slicing them neatly in half with her lightsaber.
"You will stop this at once!"
Avmaru snarled, stalking with an even, deliberate pace toward her.
"Otherwise, I will declare a state of war to exist between the Ishori Confederine and the New Republic."
"The entire system is in deadly danger," Leia said in a loud voice. "You've refused to take steps to oppose this danger. I have therefore done so in your place."
"You risk war between Isht and Khorasat,"
Avmaru shouted, still coming toward her.
"You have until I reach you to cease this action and return this vessel to my command."
Out of the corner of her eye, Leia saw Gavrissom trotting over toward Avmaru's side, and there was now exactly one card left for her to play.
"There is no need or reason to involve the New Republic," she told the Ashori. "I hereby resign from the High Council and the Senate and the Presidency. I am no longer anything but a private citizen."
"Then you also renounce all diplomatic privileges,"
Avmaru snapped. Gavrissom had reached his side now, pulling slightly ahead of the Ashori as the two of them continued toward Leia. From Gavrissom's gait, Leia could tell he was trying to reach her first, probably hoping to stop her himself, with an eye toward minimizing the political damage to the New Republic that she had just caused. But it was too late for that, and Gavrissom surely knew it.
"You are aboard an Ishori war vessel,"
Avmaru continued.
"The penalty for mutiny aboard such a vessel is death!"
Leia felt her throat tighten.
And that, she realized bleakly, was that. The captain had spoken the word mutiny, automatically invoking the highest level of Ishori war law. If she didn't back down before Abmaru reached her, he would have no choice but to bring the entire might of his warship to bear against her. Could they stop her? Probably not. Certainly not before they reached the comet. But at what cost? Though she could hold them back, she could almost certainly not do so without the eventual shedding of blood. And if her actions led to death, even deaths from ricochet shots from their own weapons, her fate would be sealed. The strict code of Ishori war justice would demand her death in return. And for the sake of unity within the New Republic, she would have to submit. Avmaru and Gaverson were nearly to her now. And then, to Leia's amazement, Gaverson turned sideways and abruptly stopped, his long flank stretching across the aisle between two consoles, blocking Abmaru's way.
"I think not, Captain," he said calmly. "I am declaring this war vessel to be under direct New Republic command."
"So it is treason from the New Republic presidency as well?"
Abmaru screamed, trying to push Gaverson boldly out of his way.
"Move aside, or die alongside her!"
"There is no treason involved,"
Gaverson said. His voice was still calm, but he hadn't budged a millimeter.
"Unless you bring such a charge upon yourself by refusing an official New Republic emergency requisition of your vessel as per Section 45-2 of the Treaties of Allegiance. Ooh!"
Abruptly, Abmaru stopped pushing.
"You speak nonsense!"
he said, screaming now at the top of his lungs.
"There has been no official requisition!"
"The treaties are vague about how such a requisition is to be made,"
Gaverson said coolly.
"Deliberately so, for an emergency situation, by its very nature, requires flexibility."
He waved a wing toward Leia.
"In this case, the requisition began when High Counselor Organa Solo..."
"She is no longer a High Counselor, by her own statement!"
"When High Counselor Organa Solo,"
Gaverson repeated, emphasizing each word,
"began moving this vessel toward a perceived source of danger."
Avmaru glared at Gaverson, transferred the look to Leia, turned it back on Gaverson again.
"You cannot seriously believe the Confederine will accept such a ludicrous claim!"
he bellowed.
"Oh, what they will or will not accept is a matter for future discussion,"
Gaverson pointed out.
"Regretfully, the Diamolid jamming has eliminated any chance for you to communicate with your governments for counsel."
He tossed his mane.
"Oh! It is your decision, Captain. You must base it on the requirements of the law, my position as New Republic President, and the word of a Jedi Knight that your ship is in deadly danger."
Abmaru was trembling with emotion, his eyes flicking back and forth between Gaverson, Leia, and the view out the canopy. Leia stole a glance out there herself, confirmed that the Predominance was indeed moving toward the comet.
"Helmsmen!"
Abmaru shouted.
"Here, my captain,"
the other replied, stepping hesitantly forward.
"Resume your post,"
Abmaru ordered, his voice starting to calm down.
"Continue on the course which the Jedi Knight Organa Solo has put us on."
He paused.
"And increase to flank speed."
"Yes, my captain,"
the helmsman said, brushing gingerly past Gaverson as the Calibop moved aside. Leia stepped aside as well, and he sat warily down in his seat again.
"Course and speed as ordered, my captain."
"Oh, come, counselor,"
Gaverson said, gesturing to Leia with one of his wingtips.
"Let us move back out of their way."
Together, they retreated again behind the monitor ring.
thank you,
Leia said quietly.
I was only doing my job,
Gabrielson said.
I have often heard it said that Calibops are long on words and short on deeds.
He ruffled his mane.
Oh, sometimes, though, it is the words that must come first.
Yes, Leia murmured,
gazing out the canopy at the comet. She could only hope that the deeds that followed would be in time.
We have them both, Captain,
the starboard tractor beam officer called up to the command walkway.
Two freighters, a YT-1300, and a Corellian Action 2.
Very good,
Nalgal said, still seething over the unexpected and unannounced change in their carefully precise schedule. The strike team on the surface, he promised himself ominously, would have some serious explaining to do when this was all over. But in the meantime, the Taranic was ready to do whatever needed to be done. And the first job on that list would be to take care of those spies out there.
Bring them in closer, Lieutenant,
he called.
Make sure they don't break away.
They won't, sir,
the tractor officer promised. Nalgal felt a movement beside him.
You sent for me, Captain?
Boyson said.
That priority threat list I asked for,
Nalgal said shortly.
Where is it?
The preliminary list has been filed,
Boyson said, sounding a bit flustered.
We were expecting to have more time to complete it.
Well, you didn't, did you?
Nalgal bit out, thoroughly disgusted. First the strike team, now Boyson.
Get back to work! Still have an hour or two before the battle out there winds down to where we'll be entering it.
Yes, sir,
Boyson said stiffly.
Will you be wanting my staff to interrogate the prisoners?
What prisoners?
Why,
Boyson floundered.
The crews of those freighters out there.
Nalgal shook his head.
There will be no prisoners.
But you said...
I said to bring them closer, that's all.
Nalgal cut him off tartly.
I don't want any debris floating outside the cloaking shield where someone might notice it.
He looked back out the viewport. The YT-1300 was twisting madly in the grip of the tractor beam, still trying to escape. The larger Action 2, curiously quiet.
Another minute or two,
he added.
And they'll be taken care of permanently.
There,
Lando snapped, pointing out the Industrious Thought's viewport.
Didn't I tell you? The Ishori have recognized the danger and are heading out to take a look.
They are merely running in an attempt to save their skins,
Senator Myotomia countered calmly.
Or else feel that the heightened maneuverability available in deep space will serve their defense better.
Fine, Lando said. Either way, you can't just let them go.
The Diamala seek no vengeance against anyone,
the senator said.
We have thwarted their unprovoked attack against Bothawi. That is sufficient for now.
But what about the threat I warned you about?
Lando demanded.
We bet on it, remember?
If such a threat exists, and if the Ishori are indeed searching for it, they will surely discover it on their own,
Myotomia said equably.
There is no reason for any Diamalan ships to expose themselves to danger.
Lando glared out the viewport at the departing ship. However she'd done it, Leia had gotten the predominance to move against the comet, and whatever surprise the Imperials had hidden out there. But with Thrawn pulling the strings, the surprise was likely to be a memorable one. Almost certainly too big for a single Ishori war cruiser to handle by itself.
Merci,
he said, striving to keep his voice casual, the tone of a disinterested party who has nothing to gain one way or the other.
I'm sure the Ishori are just as happy to get away from you, too.
What does it matter how the Ashori see things?
Myotomia said.
No reason, Lando said with a shrug. I was just thinking that if they decided they wanted to make a real fight of it, they'd need to call in reinforcements. And of course, once they're out of range of your jamming, they'll be able to do that.
Myotomia's ears curled over.
Surely they would not do such a thing.
Why not? Lando said. Remember, they think the whole Bothan species should pay for their part in the destruction of Kaer Mas. If I were them, I'd figure that the space over Bothan Wee would be the perfect spot to hash out their differences with the Dire Mala.
He nodded back in the direction of the planet beneath them.
Especially with part of the planetary shield collapsed the way it is. Any battle debris that falls through that hole is just a bonus as far as they're concerned.
Myotomia was already at the intercom, speaking urgently into it. Lando stared out the viewport, holding his breath. And then, to starboard and portside, he saw the other two Diamalan ships turn ponderously toward the departing Ashori war cruiser and begin to give chase. A moment later, he felt the slight tug of acceleration as the industrious thoughts followed suit.
We will keep them silent until the Dravestorm shield generator is repaired,
Myotomia said, rejoining Lando.
But when that is done, they will be free to leave if they wish.
Good enough, Lando said. You're just bringing the three ships?
Myotomia gazed out the viewport.
I have suggested to the captain that all Diamalan ships also be summoned to our side.
Just in case I'm right after all?
The senator's ears twitched.
As I have said to you before, the unanticipated may sometimes happen,
he said evenly.
The Diamala believe in being prepared for such an eventuality.
Hang on!
Han gritted, throwing the Falcon hard over first to the starboard, and then to port. No good. The tractor beam still had a solid grip on them. Reaching to the weapons board, he shifted the aim of the upper quad laser, now firing continuously toward the Star Destroyer. Like the swivel maneuver, all the firepower was doing no good either.
The port side stabilizer is flickering again,
Elagos announced, peering at the monitor displays.
You may do serious damage to it if you continue this way.
Han bit back a curse. Yes, he might blow the stabilizers. He might also burn out a section of the sublight drive, or melt the quads, or even crack the hull. But he had no choice but to do whatever was necessary to get clear, even if he had to tear the life out of the Falcon to do it. A cloaked Star Destroyer meant an ambush. And the last thing an ambushing Imperial would want would be to leave witnesses behind. Elagos, though, hadn't figured that one out yet.
Perhaps we should attempt to surrender,
the Kaer Masi suggested.
Yeah?
Han grunted.
Why?
To prevent our destruction, of course,
Elagos said.
Besides, Kerab and his group seem to have already done that.
What do you mean?
Han asked, frowning as he searched the sky. Preoccupied with his own part of the fight, he'd completely lost track of the action, too.
I mean, they aren't struggling against a tractor beam,
Elagos explained, pointing out the viewport. He was right. There was Kerab's freighter, a little to starboard and considerably closer to the dark hull than the Falcon was, making no attempt at all to escape. But that didn't make sense. Surely Kerab knew even better than he did that there was going to be no such thing as surrender here. Had he and the others already been killed? Or had their newly professed allegiance to Leia and the New Republic never been anything more than a trick?
Solo!
A voice crackled out from the speaker.
This is Kerab. Get ready.
Get ready for what?
What do you think?
Kerab retorted.
And look, if we don't make it, I want you to see to it that our families are taken care of. Deal?
Han threw a frown at Elagos. What in space...
We have a deal,
Elagos called toward the comm, looking as puzzled as Han felt, but apparently willing to play along.
Don't worry.
All right. It's been nice knowing you.
The comm clicked off. Han stared out at the freighter, a sudden premonition sending a chill up his back. And then, all at once, the Action 2 exploded. Beside him, he heard Elagos gasp.
What?
Just watch!
Han cut him off, gripping the helm yoke.
And like the man said, get ready.
The flare and dust of the explosion cleared, blown away by the expanding air from inside, or snatched away by the tractor beam. And suddenly, from the cloud of debris, a dozen TIE interceptors burst out. It took the Imperials no more than 5 seconds to react to this new and completely unexpected threat. But in this case, 5 seconds was far too long. The TIEs swarmed close in across the hull, dodging through the frantic turbolaser fire with casual ease, systematically blasting the tractor beam emplacements. Han watched in fascination, memories of Baron Fell's legendary flying skill flooding back. Only this time, it was a dozen Baron Fells running interference for him. And with a jolt that cracked his teeth together, the Falcon was free.
Hang on,
he snapped, cutting the ship around in a tight circle and pouring power to the sublight drive. The Star Destroyer's turbolasers were starting to open up behind him now as they saw their quarry escaping, and he threw the Falcon into a corkscrewing evasive maneuver as he drove hard toward the invisible edge of the cloaking shield.
You still have the comm ready to transmit to those idiots over Bothawee?
He added, watching the rear deflector indicator warily. If the shields collapsed before they made it out, the Imperials could still win.
I'm ready, Elagos said. As soon as...
He broke off with a gasp. Han twisted his head to the side as the familiar shape of a TIE interceptor suddenly appeared alongside. Reflexively, he grabbed for the weapons board and relaxed just in time. Emblazoned on the TIE's solar panels was the New Republic insignia. Beyond the TIE, the rest of Kareb's unit was forming up on his flank. And suddenly, the darkness around them vanished, and they were surrounded by stars again.
That's it, he said. Get busy with the comm.
Elagos cleared his throat.
I don't believe, he said, that will be necessary.
Puzzled, Han turned to look and caught his breath. Driving resolutely toward them from the direction of Bothawee were a group of over a dozen heavy warships. The comm crackled.
Hey!
Lando's voice came.
Yeah, Lando,
Han called back.
Watch yourselves. There's an Imperial Star Destroyer under that cloaking shield.
Understood,
Lando said.
Are those TIE interceptors with you?
Han smiled grimly.
You bet they are. Can you whistle up some more help?
Captain Solo, this is Senator Maya Tamiya.
A new voice spoke up.
We are transmitting your warning to all ships allied to the Diamala and requesting their assistance.
Great, Han said. I suggest you invite the Ashorian on this party, too. We're going to need all the help we can get.
Han!
Leia's voice cut in, sounding breathless and relieved and tense all at the same time.
Han, are you all right?
I'm fine, hon,
he assured her.
You still with the Ashori?
Yes. The captain's still not sure.
Leia broke off abruptly.
Leia?
Han barked.
Never mind,
she said, a sudden grim tone in her voice.
I don't think he has any doubts anymore.
Han frowned, swinging the Falcon around in a tight circle and looking back. The Star Destroyer, its ambush now thwarted, had dropped its cloaking shield. Only it wasn't just a single Star Destroyer pulling away from the comet toward the incoming fleet. It was three of them. He took a deep breath.
Okay,
he said.
Now it's a fight.
Chapter 41.
Report from base command, Admiral,
the comm officer called from the portside crew pit.
Enemy Star Destroyer has displaced two more of the tractor beam emplacements.
Have repairs begun immediately on those emplacements, Lieutenant? Thrawn said coolly. And order base command to lock three more beams onto the target.
Standing a little way off to Deesra's left, just aft of the command walkway, Paloma Dasima muttered something under her breath to Karoli Doolin.
A question?
Deesra asked, taking a step toward the two Mistral. The older woman nodded toward Thrawn.
I was telling Karoli I don't like any of this, she said, her tone disgusted. He's playing with them. Why not just blast them and be done with it? Grand Admiral Thrawn is a very subtle man, Deesra said, hoping the loftiness of his tone would discourage her from asking questions he couldn't answer.
As a matter of fact, he didn't understand what Tierce had in mind with this one either. But the Major was standing straight and tall at Thrawn's side, exactly as a good aide should, so presumably everything was still going according to plan. Thrawn must have overheard the comment. He murmured something to Tierce, got a nod of agreement, and the Major turned and walked back to where Deesra and the two Mistral stood.
Admiral Thrawn heard your question and asked me to come explain his reasoning to you, he said,
stepping to Dasima's side, where he could talk to her while still keeping an eye on Bel Iblis's attempt to break free of the trap.
He isn't interested in destroying General Bel Iblis, you see. On the contrary, he wants the General to surrender his ship and crew intact.
He gestured toward the multiple turbolaser blasts.
But as you can see, Bel Iblis is a proud and stubborn man. He has to be convinced first that he has no chance against the resources of this base. Admiral Thrawn is therefore giving him a chance to do his best against us.
Showing him the futility of resistance, Dasima said.
She still didn't sound exactly pleased, but at least the disgust was no longer evident in her tone.
And adding salt to the sore by increasing the number of tractor beams each time Bel Iblis knocks one out.
Exactly,
Tyrs said, beaming.
Admiral Thrawn has always been one to treat even his enemies with respect.
Though naturally he treats his allies far better,
Deesra put in. It wouldn't hurt to remind Dasima why she was here in the first place.
Admiral,
the comm officer called again.
We're getting a direct transmission from the Perimeter Defense Coordinator. He urgently requests your assistance in dealing with the X-Wings that have broken through his line.
Deesra threw a startled look at Tierce behind Dasima's head.
X-Wings?
He demanded.
I don't know,
Tierce replied, his voice taut. He made as if to hurry back to Thrawn's side, checked himself just in time at a quick warning glare from Deesra. It wouldn't do, the Moff had already warned them both, for Tierce to look too vital to the operation. The con man up there knew how to get him back if he needed him. But for the moment at least, their Grand Admiral seemed to have it under control.
What X-Wings are those, Lieutenant?
He asked, his voice calm but with an edge to it.
He says he reported the penetration to General Hestiv over 10 minutes ago,
the comm officer said, sounding confused.
They apparently sneaked in behind one of our freighters.
One of our freighters?
Thrawn asked.
An Imperial freighter, sir,
the officer corrected himself hastily.
Supply run, probably. The coordinator reports it was running all the proper access codes.
I'm sure it was,
Thrawn said, his glowing eyes flashing.
And General Hestiv just happened to forget to pass this information on to us, did he?
His gaze shifted around, fell on Tierce.
Major Tierce?
Yes, sir,
Tierce said, stepping briskly forward at the queue.
Shall I locate that freighter for you?
Please,
Thrawn said gravely, picking up on the cue in turn. And then, still looking back in their direction, the glowing eyes suddenly widened. Deesra frowned.
Don't trouble yourself, Major,
a familiar voice called from behind Deesra.
The freighter in question is currently docked in your number 7 hangar bay.
Slowly, disbelievingly, Deesra turned around. It couldn't be. It couldn't. But it was. There he stood, in the center of the archway leading to the aft bridge. Admiral Pelion. The element of surprise was gone. The fratricidal battle over Bothawe cut short sooner than the Imperials had most likely hoped. Even now, Leia saw, the last lingering shots of that conflict were dwindling away as the various combatants woke up to the greater danger on their flank. But even in its brevity, the fight had taken a heavy toll, she realized, as she studied the Predominance's tactical display. Out of the nearly 200 ships that had been fighting, fewer than 110 were arraying themselves for battle against the 3 Star Destroyers now moving toward them.
Oh, we're outgunned, aren't we?
Gaffersome said quietly from her side.
I'm afraid we are,
Leia conceded. And even the ships that can still fight have all taken damage. Those Star Destroyers are fresh and rested.
And not all of our ships may actually stay with us once they compute the odds for themselves,
Gaffersome said, twitching his wings.
Even with my general summons under Section 45-2, the fact is, we are still asking them to fight in defense of Bothawe and the Bothan people.
Leia nodded grimly. Something which at least half of them aren't really interested in doing.
Leia?
She lifted her comlink.
I'm here, Han, she said. Are you all right?
Oh, sure,
he said, dismissing the danger casually.
They gave up shooting at us a long time ago. Look, Elagos has been counting the ships you've got there, and neither of us is very happy with the numbers he's coming up with.
Neither are any of the rest of us, Leia said. Gaversum has a call into any new Republic forces nearby, but so far there's been no response.
Yeah, well maybe I can come up with something,
Han said, his tone studiously casual.
You know if Phalia's on Bothawe at the moment?
Leia frowned.
Actually, I believe he is. Why?
You know how to reach him?
His private comlink frequencies in the Falcon's computer, listed under his name, Leia said. Why?
I'm gonna try a little diplomacy. See if you can stall off those Star Destroyers a little.
He clicked off.
Right, Leia murmured to herself. Stall them off.
Beside her, Gaversum shook his mane.
Oh, there is one other matter of immediate concern, Leia. This fleet is made up of beings who, by and large, do not trust each other. We need someone in command who all will trust, or at least tolerate.
That one I may be able to solve, Leia said,
rekeying her comlink.
Lando?
Yes, Leia?
Lando, at the request of President Gaversum, I'd like you to accept immediate reinstatement into the New Republic military, she said. We need you to take command of this defense force.
There was a short pause.
You are kidding.
Oh, not at all, General,
Gaversum assured him.
As a hero of T'Nab and Endor, you are precisely the one we need. Oh!
There was a faintly audible sigh.
I'd argue if I thought it would do any good. All right, I'll do it. It would have been nice if you could have given me a bigger fleet to work with, though.
Hey, no problem, buddy.
Han's voice broke in.
It's all taken care of. Take a look behind you.
Leia stared at the bridge's aft view display, feeling her mouth falling open. Rising rapidly from the surface of Bothawe were over 100 ships. Everything from Z-95 headhunters to skip-rate blast boats to even a few small capital warships. And more were still rising through the atmosphere.
Han, she gasped, what in the worlds did you do?
Like I said, a little diplomacy. I got to remembering that Thrawn suggested to Lando and me that Phalia had a little private army stashed away. Made sense to me, So I called the little furball and pointed out that any Bothan who helped save Bothawee could really cash in on that when this was all over.
And Phalia came up with all of that? Leia asked, still not believing it.
Not exactly. Turns out there was a lot of signal leak